welcome to the Yes to Life show on UK Health Radio. My name's Robin Daly, host of the show and founder of the UK charity Yes to Life, a cancer charity that focuses on bringing the benefits of integrative medicine to the UK to start to bring us in line with many other countries which have already adopted a model of cancer care that incorporates support for mind, body and spirit, and that meets far more of the many needs of those with cancer. My guest this week is someone who, when confronted by a cancer diagnosis, decided to share her ongoing experience with the world through the popular Talking with Cancer podcast. Katie Phillips has achieved a remarkable remission through a judicious combination of some of the latest cancer drugs and an open-minded interest in the less tangible factors that can contribute in a multitude of ways. Katie, thanks so much for joining me on the Yes to Life show.
Hi, Robin. Thanks so much for having me.
Pleasure, pleasure. So we're on fairly familiar territory for you today in that you and a friend, Claire, are the subject of the ongoing weekly Talking with Cancer podcast series, in which you represent the 50% of us who get cancer, and your friend Claire, the 50% who don't. I believe that your cancer is described as a rare and complicated one, which doesn't sound very nice. But anyway, we'll hear more about that. So before we get into talking about your backstory, maybe you can just tell us about Talking with Cancer, how it got started, what your aim was for the series.
Yeah, definitely. So it started over 2 years ago, pretty much coincided with my diagnosis. What I felt at that time was that I was inundated with messages of love and concern, but it was very overwhelming. And so I thought what would be great is if I could just send one response to all the messages. And I asked my friend Claire, who, you know, we were old friends, but she had a journalistic background. I thought she'd be a great person to sit down and talk to with over Zoom, which we did, and we recorded the conversation, and then I had a link, so I would send that link out to anyone that was asking me how I was doing. And it got a really great response, and we just kept doing that, basically, every week. And then after a couple of months, I said to her, what if we actually launch this as a podcast? You know, we've got all these recordings. What do you think? And she was totally up for it. So we did that. And so the first series of the podcast was basically a week by week, blow by blow account, really, what I was going through right from that point of diagnosis with all the testing that happens around that time, straight into treatment. It followed everything that I was going through. And yeah, every week, Claire and I would talk about it. That then evolved. So the podcast, then in the second series, it moved into more interviews. So either she would interview someone or I would interview someone, and then we'd sort of discuss that together. And so we did two series together, and then it moved into me on my own. I think, it was sort of Claire had a busy life and a full job. And as you know, doing a podcast takes up quite a lot of time. So I said, look, I'm going to try this on my own. I'm not sure how it's going to go, but I'm going to try it. And actually, it was different, but it was great. I used to just sit down in front of the microphone and talk about what I was going through. And then I would also interview a guest. And those guests would be really varied. So I've interviewed my oncologist. I've interviewed my cardiologist. I've interviewed my yoga teacher, a dietitian, professors from the Institute of Cancer Research, all sorts of different guests. And in total, I've recorded about 60 or 70 episodes so far.
That's a lot. Yeah. Impressive. Very good. A lot don't stay the course of us. They start off very keen at the beginning and fizzle out after 3 months. But anyway, good on you. But I'm just thinking how useful that must have been to a lot of people because, as is legendary, getting cancer is like landing on another planet. There's so many unknowns. It's so unfamiliar, the territory you're in, that it's scary stuff. So to have somebody who's been there telling you about it live, if you like, from this planet cancer, it must have been helpful to a lot of people, I imagine.
I have had amazing response and it's absolutely meant the world. It's made it so worthwhile. It's sort of a lot of the reason why I've continued. I think there's been two reasons really for that podcast. It's been very cathartic for me.
Uh-huh.
Talk and share my story. I wasn't a public person at all. I didn't put my personal life on social media. I really wasn't one of those people that was telling everyone what I was up to all the time at all. But something very visceral in me said, I need to talk about this. I need to share my story. So when I started to get listeners outside of my friends and family, complete strangers that were either going through something similar or not that similar, but cancer is, very broad. You don't have to have the same type of cancer to relate to other people,
no.
I realized. Or people who had someone in their family going through it. And, lots of different things helped people. I got responses about, it's really helped me, your self-advocacy, because I've realized I need to stand up to myself more and understand my own health better. Other people have said, like Maggie's Center is one of the centers I talk about a lot. People have discovered Maggie's through my podcast. People have discovered all different ways to cope with surgery, all sorts of things, the emotional aspect, the anxiety, just the general day-to-day living with cancer and talking with cancer. And, I think that's the main thing, is sort of being able to talk about it. Some people have written to me to say, I haven't told anyone about this. I haven't told people at work. I haven't told my close friends. And hearing you has sort of helped me to feel less ashamed. That's the other interesting thing with cancer. There's a lot of shame around it.
I know, still. Yeah. I mean, of course, there used to be a massive amount in the past, but it's certainly still there in spades, though, for a lot of people. It's curious stuff, isn't it? But yes, we help quite a lot of people to share their stories for fundraising reasons at Yes to Life. And unless they happen to be the age where they live their life on the internet anyway, that everything they do is splurged out, in which case it makes no difference. It's just another thing to do. But for most people, it's they don't really want to be that public about their situation. But they, like you, are always absolutely shocked and surprised by what an amazing thing it is to go that public and how much goodwill and support comes from a huge number of people in the most unexpected way. So it's a wonderful thing. And it's exactly, actually, I think what people need to get through something like cancer is to feel that level of support, because it's a horrible journey if you're feeling isolated.
Yeah, and I think, social media is another platform to build that community, to share that voice and to share those experiences. And actually, funnily enough, I did a whole podcast about the pros and cons of the cancer community on social media.
Right.
It can be a real struggle because people who, from a distance, through a screen, are suffering, struggling. Of course, a lot of those people die, That's a very hard thing to live through. However distant you are from that person, there's still something you're relating to. So that can be very, very hard. But at the same time, you can really feel part of a community and feel incredibly supported and supportive of each other, which is amazing, actually.
Yeah, yeah, that's great. Yeah, one of the big pluses of the internet. There's plenty of bad things, but that's a plus for sure. So I'm imagining, because you were talking with a friend there, that you were also able to cross the threshold to speak about many things that would not be spoken about, kind of considered taboos, really, in the whole world of cancer. So a kind of no-holds-barred discussion. Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, other people would say, gosh, it's like eavesdropping into an conversation with two friends. I think at the beginning it definitely was. I think that's the other thing, what I recall is how vulnerable you are at the beginning. And if you feel safe with someone, which I very much did with Claire, then for me anyway, I would sort of let that guard down even more. So I probably revealed a lot, a lot about the journey building up to that point, which, my husband and I were going, we were on an IVF journey prior to my diagnosis. That's something I never shared. Like I said, I never talked about that publicly at all.
Right.
And suddenly that was sort of out there, the sort of side effects that you get with treatment, you know, how that can affect your bowels or your flatulence. You know, let's talk about that stuff.
Well, you know, yeah, people need to know this stuff, don't they? And what to do about it. Yeah, no, it's really good to talk about it for sure. And that's, I'd say it's an opportunity in a way to be speaking in such an intimate way to somebody. Just the curious thing of a few thousand people listening, you know. But anyway, seems to work, doesn't it?
Like you and I are. So, you know, I'd be sitting right here.
Yeah.
And she'd be in her home. So, again, you've got this sort of sense, this safe sense that it's just you two at home.
Yeah, exactly. That's good. Anyway, so you mentioned you've got guests coming on increasingly onto the podcast. What are you looking for when you go in search of guests to speak to?
Do you know what I've realised? It was quite subconscious, to be honest. Very often it was guests that were relevant to me, that were in my life in some way. So, you know, when I was exploring all different things around healing and around an integrative approach, I came across a woman called Anna Parkinson. She'd written a book called Change Your Mind, Heal Your Body. And I was interested in her story. She found healing through sort of meditation, and she healed a tumor that was in the back of her head that was untreatable. And over the course of 7 years, it completely disappeared. So I found her story fascinating and I did a course with her. And then I invited her to come on the podcast. So that's an example of, you know, someone that I had personal experience of. I got a great relationship with the Institute of Cancer Research, and I would sort of, you know, say to them, look, this is my situation and my story. Like, you tell me who you're working with, who you're putting forward at the moment. And so we would kind of work together in terms of finding guests that way. I asked my cardiologist, because the treatment that I was taking can affect the heart. And he almost really founded cardio-oncology, as it's become known now that the heart can get affected from all sorts of different cancer treatments. It wasn't known, I don't know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago. So I thought that was really fascinating to talk to him. So sometimes guests will come to me, but I feel like on the whole, I'm asking people that I feel I have some sort of interest or personal connection with. And I like it to be varied. I think it's, for me, it's important that I show all different sides to the cancer world. You know, I am pro-treatment and I'm pro-medicine. But I also really believe in integrative health and owning your own health and managing your own health and working collaboratively with your healthcare team. So I think that probably comes across as well in terms of the guests and the people I've spoken to. I've mentioned Maggie's. I've spoken to Dame Laureline, who founded Maggie's 25 years ago. So yeah, a really nice mix of people. I've spoken to a death doula. That was interesting because I was through, you know, a period where death was a very prominent subject in my journey. And I was interested in exploring death doulas and end of life. And I also spoke to a woman who specialized in grief and loss. She's written a book called Modern Loss, Rebecca Soffer, her name is. And, you know, she's got an interesting, very interesting approach to how we as society and culturally sort of deal with death and talk about death or don't talk about death, really.
And don't deal with it. Yes, as much as possible. Great. Those sound like really interesting topics. Yeah, the kind of stuff I love. So one of the topics that you say you cover is how cancer changes your outlook on the world. That's something I like to talk about often on this show, as it's the ray of sunshine on the otherwise bleak landscape of cancer. And it's the one thing that makes lots of people I talk to, and probably that you've talked to, actually say that cancer is the best thing that ever happened to them. Do you want to share a little bit of what cancer has taught you?
So much. Oh my God. And it makes me quite emotional when I think about it, because at the beginning, when you get a diagnosis, all you want is your old self and your old life. You just mourn for it desperately. You just imagine turning back time and that this never happened. And then I didn't think I was going to cry. And then, you know, you go on this journey and the last thing I'd want is to be my old self.
Right.
Because, you know, I think that you just learn so much about what's important, what you value, And that's not only about your health and well-being. I've got a bit of a problem with, you know, if you don't have your health, you don't have anything. I've got a bit of a problem with that because I actually would say to people, I've got everything. I don't have my health right now, but I've got everything, you know. And so I think there's a kind of misconception around that. And I think
I agree.
Sounds very cliche to say, but, you know, when you can't get out of bed or you feel depressed because of your treatment or you feel nauseous and you lose your appetite, all of those things, you know, they're such profound ways of experiencing life differently. And when you get those things back and suddenly you can get out of bed and you feel better and you can walk, it's like, wow, you know, I just, this feels amazing and I'm just going to enjoy it and relish it. Even if it's raining, I'm going to go out for a walk. It doesn't matter, you know. So I think it, again, it's really hard not to sound cliche. I was thinking earlier, it's that thing, isn't it? What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. That sort of sums it up for me. And, you know, that's not to dismiss people that are terminal with cancer or, you know, die with cancer, because that was almost my outcome. And to be honest, Robin, we don't know what the future holds for me. I mean, we don't know what it holds for anyone, do we? But, you know, I have been given the all clear for what was a very, very morbid place. But we've got no idea, you know, what's to come.
No.
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
Start your day the right way with Revive Active's range of super supplements and get the most out of life. Take one power-packed sachet mixed with water and enjoy a super tasty health drink at work, at home or on the go. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to optimize your health and well-being to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health and more. No filler, no stimulants, no artificial colours or preservatives. Just the right mix of vitamins, minerals, amino acids and hero ingredients to help you put back what life takes out. Try our 7-day or 30-day boxes and use code UKRADIO to get a free supplement shaker. Revive Active. Super supplements for a super you.
Nature's Medicine for Modern Living, a people and plants dialogue hosted by Sophie.Health. At Sophie, we bring together experts and voices who rarely cross paths. Our quest is to illuminate the ancient world of plant medicine and reimagine it for the connected age. Join us to explore new boundaries of digital personalized medicine with deep roots in the natural world. And hear from our community of international pioneers who are validating this new paradigm and improving how we feel, sleep, and cope with daily stresses naturally. Sophie.Health, reconnecting people and plants.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Just fascinating, isn't it, how embracing uncertainty in the way that you have actually brings our attention and focus into a completely different place to where it usually is, and we gain this enormous appreciation of life that wasn't really accessible to us, or if it was, we didn't know how to access it before. So without the kind of crushing, life-stopping blow of something like cancer, it's very hard for people to gain access to that view of life, just to actually see the beauty that's there in front of them all the time. It's not that life has changed, it hasn't. It's just the same as it was before you got cancer, but it's you who've been woken up by cancer, and that's as I say, that's kind of the silver lining, if you like, this horrible thing that's called cancer, is it has the power to wake people up.
Yeah, I kept on, one of the conversations I had with Claire and loved at the beginning was, you know, I hear people talk about the meaning of cancer and the gift of cancer. And I would say to her, I don't know what it is. I'm trying to find it. And then I got to a point where I realized it was about 8 months in, I think, that it's not going to land in my lap like one package, you know what I mean, all wrapped up nicely in a bow. Like those meanings are happening all the time, that kind of shedding of skin, transition periods, learning about myself. And I think, you know, I learned that I could actually cope with uncertainty. I always thought I was a control freak. And actually what I realized is like step by step, day by day, like I've got the tools and the coping mechanisms to deal with this. And also to look at, like, to shine a light on what I can take from this as a positive. And in my case, it was all the unknowns that my doctors were telling me. Everything was unknown with me. And I thought, well, that's great, because they don't know. I'm not a statistic. There are no other kids. So what do they know?
Yeah. Set your own statistics. Absolutely great. It's incredible, though, isn't it? Because, you know, this thing of embracing uncertainty, in a way, it allows life to be as it is and us to appreciate it. We don't see ourselves as in the wrong place at the wrong time, not quite doing it all the time like we normally do. Suddenly we see, yeah, we're in the right place at the right time. This is it. And we're actually present with our own life. And, you know, and of course, it is then amazing, you know, funnily enough, as it always was. But we were completely wrapped up in trying to keep it safe or under control or something, you know, to actually get a handle on it all somehow and make it something we could steer.
I think how you frame things changes massively. So for me, I was in my early 40s. I really started planning for a family, running my own business, always looking ahead, always looking like the next thing, sort of box ticking, you know, and very busy, very social. And then you just have to stop. You have to stop.
Right. And,
you know, if I have a couple of things that I'm doing a day, that is plenty enough for me. And the idea of success has changed so much. You know, it's not about the next client or the biggest fee. It's, in my case, it's a podcast that doesn't pay me, that I actually pay to make.
Right.
But it's the success is in the value that brings to other people. And as I've already said, like how I find it very therapeutic for me, that, and also that I have this record, you know, that's what that kind of makes it successful for me as well, that I've got a record of everything that I've experienced and been through. So yeah, everything, your whole perspective and your whole outlook changes. And I think it's slow. It's a very gradual sort of realization. What was I prioritizing before? That, you know, what was it and why was it? That doesn't work for me now. It's just not, never win again, you know?
Mm, right. Anyway, yeah, a relief in many ways. It was on Radio 4 News today. There was a guy talking about teaching people how to be happy. And they said, yeah, it is teachable. And, you know, and he was asked about, well, what's it all about, happiness? He said, well, basically, it's a sort of opposite of what we're told. It's all about giving, you know, helping others. That's where happiness actually lies. And I thought, well, that's it. You got it there, mate. And good to have it on the news.
But also, what is this strive for happiness? I mean, you know, we think it's a revelation when we say life is hard. Like, you know, that's not some profound thing to discover. Like, of course life is full of good and bad and happiness and difficult times. Like that just is living. So for me, it's more about acceptance. It's not about trying to find happiness everywhere, every day, all the time. That's just not realistic, you know, because feeling sad or down or, you know, is okay as well. Like you've got to have space and room for those emotions as well, I think. So it's great, you know, for people to talk about happiness and to strive for something like that. But I don't think it's realistic to expect that.
Well, I think he was talking about, they actually had a discussion about what they were referring to as happiness. And of course, it means different things in different situations or to different people. And He was when he was talking about the giving by the, of actually looking outside yourself. He was talking about more in the sort of deeper contentment, deep contentment, if you like, not the superficial. I'm having fun. I thought, well, right on. I agree with that. That actually, life is about not just trying to deal with the difficulties of life by accruing as many things as you can and getting as many good feelings as you can. It's a kind of saving scheme that doesn't work.
Yeah.
So look, back to the practicalities now. I wonder if you could just tell us a bit about your backstory. It'll probably need to be the short version at this point. About your diagnosis, your treatment, and where it brought you to today.
Yes. So I've sort of mentioned I was 43 at the time of diagnosis. I have a rare form of thyroid cancer. It's called Hobnail. There's not a lot about it. There's not a lot of us out there. Never have been. Never will be. I've been treated at the Royal Marsden in London. They're an amazing hospital. I've had an incredible experience with them. And the treatment pathway was always targeted therapy for me, or TKIs. And that is given to me in a pill form. I take that every night at home. I've had three different ones. I'm on my third TKI. The first one was Entrectinib. It worked for a period, enough to shrink the cancer that I had. At the point of diagnosis, I had metastatic. So I had it in my lung, I had it traveling through my lymph node pathway, blocking my airways, starting to show up around the abdomen. So it really was everywhere. And when I had my surgery 3 or 4 months after my diagnosis, when I'd been on the treatment, I had a 9-hour full neck dissection surgery. They removed 100 lymph nodes from my neck.
Wow.
So, I mean, I really had a lot. They tried other treatments, radioactive iodine, which is a very common treatment pathway for thyroid cancer patients, but that didn't work for me. And after about 8 months on the Entrectinib, that stopped working. They showed scans showed some progression, and I went on to a second TKI called Lenvatinib, commonly given to thyroid cancer patients. Worked for about 6 months. That was probably the worst drug that I took. It had terrible side effects with that. Had a little bit of radiotherapy during that time, and then some progression showed again after 6 months, and I got put on cabozantinib. After 2 months on cabozantinib, alongside other things that I was doing, I got my first clear scan. So I had a scan that showed no sign of disease after 2 months, which was just, I mean, very unexpected and incredible. I had another scan 5 months after that, which showed the same results. But I remain on treatment. So I'm in this funny sort of dichotomy.
Right.
I am living with cancer, but I'm cancer-free. And that's because I have a ROS1 gene. It's a ROS1 fusion that shows up with the Hobnail. Again, very unusual. ROS1's often seen in non-small cell lung cancer. It's never seen in thyroid cancer. So I was actually being treated by a bit the lung team and the thyroid head and neck team. But yeah, cabozantinib, I mean, wow. And now I'm on sort of the lowest dose. I've gone down from a 60 to a 20 milligram dose I take every evening at home. So every month I go and I get checked. I get my bloods done. I see my oncologist and I come home with another bottle of pills. So that is as much of a nutshell as I can give you.
Yeah, that's great.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Stop suffering with pet-related allergies when near dogs and cats. Great news, you can feel safe around pets with NasalGuard for pet lovers. NasalGuard topical gel blocks pet dander, hair and dust mites from entering your nasal passages. Try NasalGuard for pet lovers today. Visit Amazon or nasalguard.co.uk to learn more about NasalGuard spray and gel products. Again, that's nasalguard.co.uk.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
You're talking there about the fact that you, in parallel, you're on a learning journey, I think, learning about health and well-being for yourself and what was important and maybe what has contributed to your cancer in the first place and you needed to do something about. So do you want to address that a bit, just talk about the learning journey you've been on?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I would say that I was always very health conscious. I was always a well person, to be honest. You know, I'd always practiced yoga for over 25 years. I was always very interested in nutrition. When I was on my fertility journey, I was seeing a nutritionist and taking supplements. So that was definitely in my life. That was also, I guess, what made it even more shocking that I got a cancer diagnosis.
Right. We think we're on it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Young, healthy, no medical conditions, didn't make any difference for me. So, and also, you know, talking about my well-being, you know, I was in therapy. So it wasn't like, you know, I was one version and, oh my God, I've suddenly become a completely different version in terms of lifestyle choices and my kind of approach. But what I did find really interesting were the stories around radical remission and the stories around the power of the mind and placebo and all this stuff that we know, which is like the inexplainable, you know, how does a body cure itself, heal itself? And all at the time, understanding how amazing the body is. And I think that was always, for me, at the root of my healing. I never was angry with the cancer. I never owned the cancer. I never called it my cancer. I still don't. I accepted it was in my body, but I found these meditations and things were actually much more about acknowledging it, loving it, and thanking it. Because I didn't want to be aggressive towards it. You know, I felt like it was aggressive enough. So there was something in that. There was something in my mindset of like how I was feeling in relation to the cancer. And then there was something in the narrative I was getting from the doctors. They always told me you have an incurable but treatable cancer. And I started to feel like that is their narrative. That doesn't have to be my narrative.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I realize now, like, I often didn't read the letters that they would follow up an appointment with. And now I realize I didn't want to penetrate my thoughts with their words.
No.
Because the language is so incredibly powerful. When you start to read the letters, it makes it very, very scary because there in black and white, in very medical terms, is you, and it doesn't really feel like you. So it's a very funny juxtaposition, you know. And I just never really engaged in that kind of black and white terminology.
Right.
And then with these stories of radical remission and integrative care, and I came across Synthesis Clinic, Dr. Nina Fuller-Shavel, who I interviewed as well, I just started to just think more broadly, really, with my lifestyle choices. And I think what's difficult is that, you know, when you really don't feel well and people are telling you, do yoga, do exercise, get out, you know, it's really good for you. It's quite hard because doing those things.
Agreed.
It's really hard to do physically. You can't do that. But bit by bit, I was doing more and more physical exercise, again, like I used to do pre-diagnosis. And just understanding what these radical remission factors were, these studies about people told similar to me, you know, terminally ill with cancer, chronically ill, and yet they turn things around, and there's sort of common factors with these people. So really it was about looking at some of those. And I did what I think a lot of people in my position would do. You're looking for hope everywhere. So I threw everything at it. It was a bit scattergun at first.
Right. You've got to start somewhere.
I saw a sound healer and I saw a breath work specialist and I did the chakra healing course, and you know, I did a lot of it, and then I kind of went down the road with, okay, well, what's sticking here for me? What's
right
feels like it's really working? Where do I feel a connection with these practitioners? I think that's really important as well. And I just followed that path, really.
Your intuition, one of the factors, of course, in Kelly Taylor's work. Excellent. It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, I completely appreciate what you're saying. You were interested and lured into looking at things like the Radical Remission Project. Well, the kind of things that are in there, you know that they're not on the radar of the oncologists who are pronouncing, you know, your chances on bits of paper. And so, therefore, it's absolutely, if you set some store by the fact that you realise that you know that people can turn around completely incurable disease, in fact, by a whole set of random steps that they take and their own determination, then you know that actually, well, this limited thinking to believe that you're completely cornered, that you don't stand a chance, and that obviously you do have a chance. It might be an immensely small one, but you've got one. So why not gamble on it? I mean, you know, there's no reason to give up if you actually value your life and you want some more of it. There's every reason to play for it, you know. So, so I think you're totally pragmatic in your decisions to avoid what, as you said, is powerful language that tends to box you into a situation.
Yeah, and I also think, you know, I'm lucky that I have the disposition that I have, you know, that is my natural sort of character and personality. And I think what is difficult for some people is that they're sort of trying very hard to find this belief and this hope, but they just can't feel it. And,
right.
That is very difficult and challenging for some people because it's not something you can bottle.
You can't cook it up. You're right. I would connect it with the will to live, which is not very strong in some people. And I wouldn't say it's something they can't do anything about, because there'll be a reason why they have that low will to live, which they could look into, face into it, and find out why they value their life so little, because it's unnatural to value your life so little in my book. That if there's nothing suppressing your desire to live, it will be strong.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. I think it's, you know, what is this experience for you? Try to see it as an experience. How are you going through that experience? And, you know, again, it's not for me. It wasn't about the fight, you know, the fight to live and I've got to get through this. And it was an innate belief, an innate feeling. But yes, I had the tools already. And I think for people that don't, you've got to start to really open up that toolbox, you know, and really rummage around in it. Because you're right, like there will be reasons why.
Sure.
And it's not to say, you know, this is why people get cancer because, you know, there's a reason. And I don't believe that. But I think when you're thrown at life, it's about how you deal with it. I mean, I remember saying to my husband, because he would say to me often early on, you know, I need you to be strong. I need, like, he was projecting a lot. And I let him because I understood, you know, I totally understood. But I remember saying to him at one point, I said to him, I haven't said this yet. I need you to know and I need to voice it. I want to live. I don't want this to be the thing that kills me. I need to say that. I need almost the universe to hear that because I felt like I wasn't actually verbalizing that.
Right.
And he said, I know. I said, I need to make that clear. Like, I want to get through this and I want everything to be okay. And what was interesting about that was that everything I was saying, and I would sometimes say to my oncologist, like I said to her once, I feel like it's all going to go. This was in the depths of darkness.
Wow. Did you? Great.
Yeah. And she was great. And she said to me, well, let's hope it will.
Well, you know, when you're faced with these kind of this certainty that you've had it, you know, that's a kind of certainty. Your terminal, that word means you've had it. We don't do terminal, by the way, yesterday. You're either alive or you're just dying right now, or you're dead. But terminal is not something that, I don't think it's something we should work with at all because it has this future certainty and who knows what the future holds, as we pointed out earlier. So always leave room for incredible things to happen. And so for you to come out and say that actually you want to get through this and you want to live and everything is a very audacious thing to say in the face of all these certainties from experts and all the rest of it. It's pretty outrageous stuff, really, but it's great. You know, that it's a huge part of your power to heal yourself, I think. You're voicing it. So, yeah, good on you, I say.
Thanks.
Okay, well, look, we're just about out of time. If there's one thing you've learned along the way that you wish you'd known right on day one, what do you say it was?
Well, I could get a bit more profound on that, you know, and sort of in keeping with what we've been saying, which is, like, trust your intuition and, like, trust your belief. Find your belief and trust it and focus on that. Don't let other people's opinions or ideas weigh you, even if they're wearing a white coat. Do you know what I mean? And it's not to undermine them. It's not to say they're wrong, but it is to say that like those 1%, 0.5%, like they do happen. I mean, right. I'm a 0.01% in terms of my diagnosis. So just as equally as that being my reality, so could the reality be, you know, against all odds.
Right.
Look where I am. So I think it's that, you know, I think people do get bogged down by statistics. They love statistics. And actually, I didn't have any. And I think that's great.
It is great in a way. And many people, they quite deliberately don't ask for them as well. Some people want to know for sure. I think it's a character thing. As much as anything, some people will have the statistics and it will actually give them the energy to act. You know, they'll say, right, okay, it's like a challenge, you know. And other people just don't want to know because they don't want the imposition of this very strong idea that you've got almost no chance sort of thing. It's a character thing, what people want. But it certainly isn't something that people should be fed if they don't want it. They should be left plenty of room to make their own odds, I think.
I think so. I don't know if that is my one thing, but there's so many things. But I think statistics, that's something actually I haven't really thought about before. But yeah, I think sort of following studies and trials and numbers, I don't know if that's helpful.
Well, so I think some people do find it helpful. And they get very scientific about the whole thing and they're adding up this pod. They're going to add 2% by doing this. You know what I mean? It comes a really constructive journey of adding little bits of potential to their odds of surviving. So, but it's not for everyone. All right. Well, look, it's been really interesting to talk. Thanks so much for coming on the show today. Loved talking about your unusual experience of living your cancer publicly in the way you have. And I'll send you my very best wishes for your ongoing well-being.
Thank you so much. And yeah, thank you for having me on. It's been lovely to talk to you.
Bye-bye. You can check out Katie's Talking with Cancer podcast on all the major podcast platforms, and also visit her website at talkingwithcancer.com. I want to give you advance warning that starting in April, Yes to Life is celebrating 20 years of bringing the best of integrative medicine to people with cancer in the UK. And by that, I mean direct support via our helpline, wider support through Wigwam and our peer-to-peer service, education in the form of conferences, workshops and seminars, our book The Cancer Revolution and other sister publications, well-being sessions which are now available most days, information in the form of our extensive and resource-filled website, which includes a world-class searchable directory of therapies and providers, and a video introduction to integrative medicine. If you're not familiar with our website, then I can highly recommend a look around. It's yestolife.org.uk. And a great starting point for that is the Our Services page, for which there's a link right close to the top of the home page. And then, of course, there's our output on social media, blogs, links to resources, the Cancer Talk podcast series, our Horizons platform for healthcare professionals, and that's not to mention the weekly Yes to Life show, with a searchable back catalogue of almost 500 editions available. So we're planning a year of great stuff to celebrate our two decades, and the best ways that you can keep up with all the action are to either make a point of following us on social media, and we're on Facebook, Instagram, X and LinkedIn, or sign up to our newsletter, for which you can find an enticing sign up button in the footer of every page of our website. And as a reminder, that's yestolife.org.uk. Also, of course, you can make sure to join me each week here on UK Health Radio, as many of my featured guests and topics throughout the year will be selected to contribute to the themes that we'll be focusing on. I look forward very much to speaking to you again next week in another Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.